Welcome to episode 5, I think. Yeah, episode 5 of this podcast. Today I'm going to be talking a bit more on contracts, because they are very important. But I'm also going to go into a lot about the United Kingdom, and basically any other state in the world, and how they really work. What to think of them as, you know. I know most people don't really think about this sort of stuff, and you know, it's just they either really can't be bothered, or they think that, they know everything. And I'm not saying I know everything, but I do know this. I know that each human being who is born. I must stress, is very distinct from birthed. So each human being that comes into this world is free. And that's it. I've seen so much evidence that law and legality is all based on names. For example, there's a book called Textbook on Trusts, I believe, that was being read out by someone. There's a link on the website, Understanding Commerce, to this podcast where it talks all about trusts, and obviously trusts come in with property. And it was saying in there that, you know, that you can't actually own any land. You can own title to an estate, but of course an estate is a fiction, and that made me think it's all about fictions. And then we think, well, why would you want to have a relationship with a fiction and pretend you're part of that? And that's all about benefit privileges. Because you can get certain benefits by saying something. Like, say, if I say that I am... I'll try to think of an example here. If I say that I'm disabled, I automatically get put into a category, get labelled, etc., etc. I'm not talking about discrimination here. Well, it is discrimination in a way, but not sort of like bullying and that sort of thing. But basically, you get special privileges, like you get special care and stuff like that. And what I'm trying to say here is that you say that you're something or that you belong to something in order to get benefit privileges from it. That's why I say you must be a citizen to do this, you must be a citizen to do that, you must be a resident to do this, you must be a resident to do that. So, it really is all about names, and it's a completely fictional world. I don't know how long the legal world has been like this, like just focusing on names, but really. And when you look through how courts work, you start to see it really is all about contracts, claims and title. So, I've scribbled loads of extra stuff on this sheet here to talk about. Let's have a look. What should I go for first? Yeah, well, there are many commercial redemption people saying that the US is bankrupt. And I've even watched a video just now where someone points out some evidence of that, but, you know, I haven't really confirmed that. And they say the US is bankrupt, and basically the creditors in the bankruptcy are the international. That means the international bankers, the IMF, Federal Reserve, etc. They're all sort of foreign. I'm just trying to apply this to the UK, because the UK is very similar to the US. You know, it uses currency, it's not backed by anything, anything tangible, that is. Of course it is backed by securities, basically. So I'm just thinking to myself, who are the creditors in the UK bankruptcy, if there is one? And people point to the Bankruptcy Act of 1869, sort of as I think establishing a bankruptcy. Someone on Lawful Rebellion does, I think it's Guy Uden, he does a podcast about that sort of stuff, and I'm just thinking, where in there does it say the UK is bankrupt? I mean, it changes the bankruptcy laws, certainly. But I can't see any clear evidence. I mean, HJR 192 is the complete opposite in the US. I mean, they talk about it, you can pay by any sort of currency. I think that's the general gist of what people are saying about it. that payment must be accepted in any form. So, it doesn't really matter to me whether the UK is a bankrupt company or not. I mean, it's still a company, whatever way you look at it. I mean, just because even if it wasn't bankrupt, it doesn't mean it has jurisdiction over everyone. So I was just coming back, in one of my videos on the Matthew 376 channel, I talked about the whole thing about capital letter names and the sort of, I don't know, I suppose you call it a fallacy that's going on. And I suddenly had this thought, you know, when you write a letter, let's say you write to a company about something, what would you write to a company about? Say you write to your bank about a problem or something like that. I mean, nowadays people email, but, you know, say you write to the bank and you put in the address, like, in my case, it would be the Nationwide Bank, Faversham, blah-de-blah, wherever that is. And you don't actually write that in capital letters, yet the same company that is officially written in capital letters receives that mail. You see, you're actually sending it to the same company that's registered with all caps, but when you talk about it, normally it isn't. So I'm just thinking, if we're these persons are corporations, then surely when the government say anything in standard proper English capitalisation, aren't they simply addressing the straw man? Really? You know? I don't really like the idea of having two separate trusts. I don't really think that's what happens. Sorry, yes, it does happen. But basically, I'm trying to get over the whole thing of how come when some companies send you mail, it's in your name's in all caps, and how come it's sometimes in proper English. I'm still trying to get over that, and I'm just thinking perhaps this is why. It's because just writing in proper English doesn't mean they're not addressing the fiction. It just means that, like when you write to a company, you're addressing the fiction, but you don't write in all caps. I mean, sometimes you write for someone at the company, but you still don't write the company's name in all caps. I mean, like you say, Mr. Smith, Nationwide Bank, wherever it is, but you still write Nationwide Bank in upper and lowercase. Because think about it, how can they get everyone to write these names in capital letters? How could they get everyone to conform to that principle? They can't. So what they do is they just take that as meaning this the fiction. And I think that's exactly what's happening with the straw man. You know, it's simple things like this that I never end up thinking of. And then when I do, it just all falls into place. You are a security. People talk about your birth certificate being traded on the stock exchange. I'd say you might not actually be a physical paper security, but you are basically a security. As long as you pay taxes, you are meaning that the UK government can repay its debt to whoever they owe the money to. I'd say the international, or the creditors. Bank of England. Although most of it, I actually thought that the government had to repay the Bank of England for all the debt, but it actually isn't. What they do is they pay all sorts of, like, foreign governments and etc., and it's just a whole web of debt that the world is in, basically. Now, bankruptcy actually means that they can't pay the creditors, and I've read loads of official sources that say that the UK government has never failed to repay its debts over whatever period they specified. So I'm actually thinking, how could it be bankrupt? But as I said, it doesn't matter to me. I'm not trying to force this theory onto the UK, this whole redemption theory. I'm not trying to force it onto the UK and make the UK fit into it and say, yes, the UK is bankrupt. I'm just seeing how things are working out in my life, and from that, making up what I can about it. Yeah, you're a security, because if the government had no citizens, then who had sureties, then they couldn't pay taxes, they couldn't repay their debt. I mean, who's going to loan a government a money if they have no citizens to repay the debt? You know, the government is basically a company. It works exactly like a company does. You know, it has creditors, it has debtors. You know, it's a company. It may not be registered, but only companies in the UK have to be registered, not the UK itself. I mean, that's another thought. I never thought of that before, and I just thought, yes, of course, when I came across that. It's a company. Most governments are companies. And that leads you to think, well, how can they have authority? And yes, you're absolutely right in asking that question. I'm not going to say they can't have authority, but they certainly can have authority. They certainly can. But like any corporation, you've got to claim that you're a member of it. And you're a member of the UK if you are a citizen. And this leads me to my next topic. The wording on all the, like, the HM Revenue and Customs website. That's the tax collector people for the UK. They never say man or woman. Neither do statutes. Everything talks about persons, taxpayers, and people who live in the United Kingdom, who have an address in the United Kingdom. Oh dear. Who live in England. And I mean, it doesn't matter whether they say England, Britain or UK. If you live in it, then you're a member of it. Okay? If you live on it, then you're not. Like, here's an example. If I live on top of the... If I live on top of a supermarket building and sleep on top of their building, it's a ridiculous example, but I'm not part of that company, am I? I'm on top of it. But if I were to live in the supermarket, that would mean I'm part of the company, or at least that's what most people would take that to mean. And like when it says you must register your child. A child is a person. It says on Wikipedia, in the legal world or something like that, a child is considered a minor, which is a person of young age. So when they say your child must go to school, they're meaning your person, that person must go to school. Okay? So, when you say you're living in the UK, you're basically living within the bounds of that company's rules, and you're saying you're living in the corporate fictional world that they have. Because that's what it is. It's a world of titles and names. People have got to wake up to that. You know, on the news they go on about national debt and the credit crunch and, oh, it's so bad. And that is related to public currency. You can easily keep yourself alive and well without having to have anything to do with the UK and all its public faces, like, I don't know. But if the Bank of England was a creditor, surely it would be a private? And it is sort of, you know, I'm not sure about that. So yeah, the companies are subject to the rules. Companies Act, because they register in the UK and they use addresses and postcodes in the UK. So that's what I wanted to say, really. I wanted to say that we are under civil law. We are not under criminal law. Civil law is basically, from what I've read about it, law of contract. Civil basically means people. So, people law, contract law. And there is a monetary value attached to every court case called a penal sum. And even murder cases are civil matters. There is no common law involved with them. If there was, then you'd just go and talk to someone about it. You wouldn't actually go into this sort of court. So it's all sort of, it's all civil law. Roman civil law. Right, basically, finally, if you accept benefits from someone, that constitutes an acceptance of their obligations, of your obligations, to them, I mean. So, if someone says, I'd like you to go and buy me a sandwich, and they hold out a £5 note, you take that, and because you've heard that, and unless you can prove that you didn't hear that, then you have taken that benefit, which is basically the money, as long as you have that, fulfill that obligation to buy the sandwich. And also Winston Sharp talks about bonded statutes, and that basically what a policeman's job is, establish surety for the statute. Okay, so I think we've almost finished. I think we've finished this episode, so there may be a next episode, or there may not. But in any case, there will be more audio coming from understandingcommerce.110mb.com and from youtube.com/Matthew376. Thanks for listening.